Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Morning Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go on the air?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good, but I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
At this time, I have the honor to present to you the moral leader of our nation. I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summit of the Negroes' legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual.
Well, good morning. Welcome to From Marvel with Love. I just wanted to share a bit of that beautiful, all-inspiring speech of Dr. Martin Luther King in 1963. I have a dream. And you know, we all have a dream. And we have come this far to 2022. We have been rattled with all kinds of pandemics in the Black community, from employment, violence, illness, financial disruption. I mean, just so many things. Children, single mothers, men in prison. I mean, the Black race has been just riddled with pandemics. And then in 2020, we were hit with the coronavirus. And since then, we've had several variants, and now it seems to be coming to an end. Well, first of all, welcome again. Welcome to the show. And I like to start out my show by saying, this is the Lord, that the day that the Lord has made, and I will be glad and rejoice in it. Come rain or shine, it is a beautiful fabulous day, and it is Fabulous Friday, y'all. This is the second Friday of the new year 2022, and I have a great show planned for you today. My first guest, she will be via phone interview with Dr. Sherry Hicks. She is an author, and her latest book is called Shadowed Paths. And so we are going to talk to Dr. Sherry about paths. And I look forward to this interview. I read the book. It was a wonderful book. And, you know, that's crazy. But I left the book on my bed. But it will be here. And then we will have Andrew Williams III. He is a healthcare professional in the medical field, and he's in respiratory and pulmonary medicine. And so we're going to be talking about just the importance of the vaccines. And I'm going to tell you that we are hosting iMessenger Media, the Healthy Living Expo, and that is going to be on January 17th, the day that we celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday. That was another reason for playing I Had a Dream, because we want you to come out to this event. And I will tell you just a little bit about that, but my last guest for today, but not least, is going to be Don J. Nelson. He is the principal consultant. He is the founder of 21U Strategies. It's a consulting arm of the organization. And we're going to just talk about business. We're going to talk about entrepreneurship, the challenges and the successes in business. And I really want to know about the economy and how does that truly affect Black business. So we're going to enjoy our interview with Don J. Nelson, and so we will be that. So now, let's go to the Realizing the Dream Healthy Living Expo. Realizing the Dream Healthy Living Expo is hosted by iMessenger Media and the Don't Believe the Hype Foundation, and it's powered by the Dallas Morning News, Co-America, Avenue PCR, and it's going to be at the African American Museum in sunny South Dallas, Fair Park, at 3536 Grand Avenue in Fair Park. So come, please come. We're going to have COVID vaccines. You can get tested as well, win prizes, and participate in the ultimate karaoke contest. Doesn't that sound good? So if you've got a voice, and even if you don't have such a good voice, you can come and enjoy the fun. Bring the family. This is a free event. It is going to be from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And listen, the weather forecast, I was checking it out this morning, we're looking at 60 and sunny in South Dallas. And we know it's sunny in South Dallas, so it's going to be 60. It won't be those freezing temperatures out there. We have some incredible people that will be participating in that, and I'll come back to that a little bit later on in the show and let you know who that is going to be. So now once my guest calls in, which looks like she has, let me just tell you a little bit about Dr. Sherry Hicks. She graduated from Wichita State University with honors in social work and is a member of the Golden Key Honor Society. She was entered into the 2001 edition of Who's Who Among Colleges and Universities, attending Wichita State University a second time with graduate studies. She took courses in cultural anthropology and criminal investigations, furthering her graduate studies. She attended Grand Canyon University, where she studied professional counseling. In 2019, Sherry completed a doctoral degree in spiritual counseling. Sherry has worked with various agencies, ranging from children's services to services targeted at supporting adults recovering from drug and alcohol abuse. She is also an author of several books, and I'll tell you her first was The Diary of Words, The Bitter Curse, and The Ties That Bind Us, Wake Up, Don't Be Deceived, and What I Had to Overcome to Be Who I Am, Volume 1 and 2. And now her latest book is called A Shadowed Past. So now, we are just going to welcome Miss Sherry. Hello, Dr. Sherry, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
Doing great. Blessed to be alive another day.
Yes, ma'am. We are all blessed to be alive another day. And I'm telling you. So let's just start. I read the book. And you know what? I was going back over it this morning before I left the house, walked out and left it on my bed. So I don't have it to show. And I know that I want to tell our listening audience that we are live, and we are on our Blog Talk Radio as well as StreamYard. But you are available to be on StreamYard with us today. So we are having our Blog Talk Radio. So if you guys go to blogtalkradio.com, Cheryl's World, and look for From Marvel with Love, you'll find this. Or you can actually call in and listen while you are at work. You can put your phones in and tune in. And that number is 646-200-0459. That's 646-200-0459. And I will also put that in the chat for those of you who are listening. But Dr. Sherry, why don't you go ahead and just kind of first give a little bit more background about who you are and how you got on this journey while I go ahead and type that in.
Okay. I started this journey because when I started to the master's in the counseling program, a counselor has to be counseled. And I was like, oh, okay. So I picked out this therapist. I started going to this therapist, and I caught myself acting as some of my clients. And when we finally started to open up, when I finally started to open up and start talking, I had roadblocks. And I hadn't realized that I closed off a lot of things in my life just to move on. You know, they call them blinders. We have to have a way to survive throughout all of the trauma, if I say it like that, in our lives. And when I started to open up, I started to bring these things back to life. But one of the things that I've always loved to do and I always love is poetry. So I would write things that would happen to me in a day through my poetry. And so I had this big giant notebook of poems. And she was just like, could you read me one? And I read her a poem. And she said, you know what? As you was reading that poem came to life, those words. And she was just like, have you ever thought about writing a book? And that was the beginning of my journey.
Wow, that's a wonderful journey to be on, to tell your story and tell it in poetry. Because as I read the pages, before it kind of got really deep, there was a poetry, and it sounded wonderful, and it, you know, and it made you think about it. So now, as you were writing A Shadowed Past, you say, teach self-denial and make practice pleasure. And you can create for the world a destiny more sublime than ever issued from the brain of the wildest dreamer. So tell us.
Okay, it blanked out. I can't hear.
Oh, okay. Can you volume all the way up? Can you hear me now?
I can.
Okay. All right. So what I was saying was, you say teach self-denial and make its practice pleasure, and you can create for the world a destiny more sublime than ever issued from the brain of the wildest dreamer. Tell us what you meant by that.
Okay, so that was something written by Prince Harry.
Okay.
Prince Harry, yeah. He wrote that in regards to my book because I told him, he said, tell me something about yourself. And I said, I was a dreamer. I lived my life through dreams because that's all I had. I mean, like as a child, you're going through something. One of the things that we are afforded is our ability to imagine and dream. And I lived my life as a young person through my dreams and my imagination. And so I'm a dreamer. So I told him, I'm a dreamer. And as I've gotten older, I chase those very dreams. And so he wrote that statement.
That is so cool because as I was – looking at your Facebook page, I ran across that from him, and I thought, oh, wow, Prince Harry wrote this for her. And I was like, but teaching yourself self-denial, wow, and make it practice pleasure. I think that right there just really opened my mind. And then in your book, the description is really done really, really well. So
Thank you.
A few questions. So one of the questions is, have you ever felt isolated or alone? And now does that lead to more dreaming or less dreaming when you're feeling that
way? Okay. When I felt isolated and alone as a child, I'm going to go as a child first.
Okay.
It's okay because really as a child, how much of the outside world do you really have to deal with? Not a whole lot.
Right.
Okay. And when you're going to school, I mean, it's still okay because they label that as shy, bashful, and all of those other things. And, you know, but as you become an older adult, then now you got to walk into fighting these areas in your life. Because you have to deal with the public. You have to, all depending on what type of job. And even if you're just down to a waitress, you're still dealing with the public. So those things you have to open them up, sort of. In the isolation, you have to fight that. You have to learn how to be this person who's well with communication, who knows how to articulate themselves, who knows how to express themselves. And that was a journey for me.
Mm.
That was and how crazy this is going to sound is that I really, really didn't realize how important that was until I was in my 30s. I went to college in my 30s. I was a welder. And as a welder in my younger years, I didn't have to deal with a whole bunch of people. I worked in a factory. All I had to do was go to my booth and wail for the day. But as I started to go to college and you started to become a public figure, so to speak, a social worker, you have clients. You have clients that you are teaching the very thing you're trying to overcome. That is really hard. But the more I worked on it, the better I felt. And I think that that's what my counselor at that time in my graduate program was trying to tell me, is that you have to let some of that stuff go. You got to recognize it, because even if you progress along through life and you never recognize those very things that hold us back, like fear, and I'm going to say fear again, because a lot of people don't acknowledge the fact that they do have those fears, but fear grows. If they're never recognized, acknowledged, and spoken about, then they grow. And the more they grow, you accumulate new fears. Am I making sense to you?
Yeah, you are. You are making sense. You are. Because that just leads me to my next question, because are you a people pleaser or are you a self-pleaser? Do you want to please yourself or do you want to please other people? And do you feel like it's somebody else's responsibility to know how you feel or what you feel?
Okay. When I was younger, I was a people pleaser. And as a young person, I was always let down trying to please other people. As I got older, I am myself. I please myself. I don't need acknowledgement of other people to be who I am. Back then, I didn't know who I was. I had so much trauma in my life, so many things. I wasn't allowed to be who I needed to be because there were so many scars in my life, so many disappointments and let down. And I visualized the fact that if everybody liked me, then it would be okay. Well, I'm in a position right now, I like me. I could care less what anyone else thinks. I like me. And the more I like me, the better I am. You're not going to be liked by everyone.
You said a mouthful there, Dr. Sherry, because that is so true. We do look out to be people pleasers. And you know what, you said this as a young child, but unless you, I mean, when you think about it, how many adults do you know that are still like that to this day?
Yeah.
That are still trying to please other people to get them to like. And then the next step is judgment of ourselves. So, you know, judging yourself harshly, where does that actually come from? What do you think?
I think that comes from insecurities and low self-esteem. And when you've got a lot of things that occurred in your life that you haven't dealt with, those feelings, low self-esteem and insecurities, they exist. But I'm going to tell you something that I learned, again, from my counselor, and it was called mirror therapy. Every day you look in that mirror and you write down all of the things that you love about yourself. And then you write down all of those things that you think you dislike about yourself. And then you look at both of those pros and cons. And then how can you fix those things that you don't like about yourself? And I'm going to use me. One of the things that I never really loved about myself was my nose. And because I've always thought my nose was just like fat and wide. As a matter of fact, in my 40s, I was doing a local modeling job in Kansas, and I had went to we call them gigs. So I went to this gig, and this guy was just pointing out all of the things that he didn't like about me for that particular job. And isn't it ironic that he brought up my nose? And when he did, that's a sore spot for me. So he started to eat away at my insides as he started to talk about my nose, because that was one of my things. And so I learned that there is so much more to us as a person than we allow ourselves to know. Like, I lost my father when I was, like, what, 7 or 8 years old. And I learned that I have my father's nose. So all of those feelings of wanting to have surgery to fix that nose, I'm taking away something. I'm taking away who I am and who my father was. Now I embrace this big nose. This big, wide, fat nose is my father's nose. So when I look in the mirror, I look at the image of my father, and I feel proud.
Yes, yes. Wow, we could have a really big conversation about fathers. But I have one of our listening audience, Terry Allen. He asks, do our dreams reflect our self-esteem? And are our achievements limited to our level of our self-esteem?
Oh, I hope I answer all of that. Okay.
Let's just break it down. Let's start with the one. Do our dreams reflect our self-esteem?
Oh, yes. See, because here it is. Our dreams is our thought process. If we have low self-esteem, we, and those dreams, more often than not, those dreams occur of all of the things you can't do, okay? But if you're working on elevating yourself and loving yourself, telling yourself every single day how much you cherish and love yourself, then your dreams start to become better, and they start providing you with a vision. I'm thinking I'm going to the next level in your question. Sometimes we get those dreams that tells us all about who we can be, the great things about us, and then it becomes a vision, a map, so to speak, how to get to be this person you want to be, and to show you that person and how you need to get there. So, yes, you know, like Joseph in the Bible, which is one of my favorite stories in the Bible, when he used to talk about his dreams, all of the things he was going to be. Sometimes that's your dream. Sometimes your dreams tell you who you are when you don't even know who you are.
Yeah.
Did I answer that pretty good?
I think you did good. I think you did good on that one. Also, he says, are our achievements limited to the level of our self-esteem? And I think what he means by that is, what are we going to achieve in our lives if we have low self-esteem?
You know what? If you have low self-esteem,
scale of 1 to 10 is going to be right. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, if you have low self-esteem, you're limited to everything, even in your dreams.
Limit your dreams.
Yes. I learned that the more I do this, even now, even to this day, I get up every morning and I think of something great about myself. And I say those things, say it out there, put it in existence. I am this, even if I'm still working towards being that. I am already that because my vision in my mind has told me that's who I am. So I act and be that part. Yes, our dreams do become limited with our self-esteem.
And that is true. He says, I mean, can we only go high as we believe we can?
Yes. Yes. That's your belief system. You know what?
Yes.
Yes, I agree.
Jan Van Zandt has a quote, and he references here, everything that happens to you is a reflection of what you believe about yourself. We cannot outperform our level of self-esteem. We cannot draw to ourselves more than we think we are worth. And that was by that. That was a quote from Iyanla Van Zandt. And I really do, I kind of like that. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
our belief system, where does it come from? You know, where does it come from? Does it come from, if it comes from our childhood, if it comes from what we grew up in, then how do we go about changing that belief system?
Okay, I'm going to share this with you. As I was growing up, I looked around at my environment. My environment was full of things that I didn't want to be. But yet, I caught myself being those very things that I didn't want to be. I love my mother. I love her dearly, but I didn't like her lifestyle. But mm-hmm. I caught myself imitating that very lifestyle that I hated so much. Okay? I was the same kind of person she was. Because you know what? I didn't know any better. And I didn't know how to reach out and to move along in life to do any better. Okay? And so it does, because somewhere in our psyche, our self-esteem, it surrounds who you are in that moment. You either feel better or you feel worse. And if you have, if you are surrounded by that and you've never been out of into another type of environment, that's all you got, whether you feel good about it or not. But I was determined that's not how I wanted to live. That's when I got up and I went to college. I went to college on my own accord. You know, I didn't come from this big family of going to college. I went on my own. And even as a young child, I've always had this thing with God. I can't explain that. It was a connection. I knew him at a young age. And when I got to college, I took a sociology class. And in that lecture class, that professor, everything that professor talked about that particular day was all of who I was. And I started crying, uncontrollably crying. And she came up there, she said, "You okay?" And I'm just like, I'm just freeing myself. All of everything you're talking about, and God meant for me to hear that in that moment of my first day of class. You releasing all of this stuff. You becoming a new person. And when you become a new person, you got to think like a new person. Not only think like a new person, you got to act like a new person. Okay? So it's like shedding layers, all of these layers that held me in one spot. Now I'm free. I'm diverse. I'm movable. My self-esteem is building. I see a different life. I'm feeling a different life. I can have a different life. That's
wow.
You can be and have whatever you want.
Yes. I agree with everything you're saying, Dr. Sherry. It makes absolute sense to me. When and how, or do, no, I guess here's the question. If we are victims in our childhood, in our young adult life, even as a senior citizen, if we feel like we are victims, is that identity to stay with us, or do we release it? How do we release that? Because you don't want to identify yourself as a victim, because it seems like to me that it keeps on happening over and over again as long as that's what you are identifying with. So how can we correct that?
Okay, you are stuck in that realm when you have no one else to talk to. You know, we live in a society now where people don't really care about they call them pity parties. You know, I don't want to be a part of a pity party. And, you know, me, even now, I listen to people. You know, say whatever is on your mind, because being held as a victim is a person who hasn't been allowed the ability to express their pain. So you have a person that, and for better lack of words, here I go, this person has built their whole realm of life on being negative. Everything is negative. There's nothing positive. And that's because in their mind, there's a whole lot of negativity, whether it was abuse or physical, mental, or whatever. They haven't had the ability to say or do or feel any other kind of way. So negativity is all they know. They are a victim.
Mm.
And but when you teach them, they're, were you going to say anything?
No, go ahead.
Okay. When you teach them that they are allowed, it's okay to speak about how you felt when you were a victim in this certain situation. It's okay, because a lot of families make you shut it. I grew up in a family that what happened in the house stays in the house. You didn't go outside of your house, and you didn't talk about all of those things that happened. But yet, I was a talker. I always was a talker. But whether you believe me or not, here's where the victim part became a part of me, is when I went outside of the house to talk about it. My family, we grew up in a little neighborhood. Everybody knew each other, and we were all related in some kind of way. So when you open up your mouth, now you are establishing a title for yourself as pretty much a nutcase. You make up all of these stories. These stories are not true. You know how she is. She just come up with all of these things. But, you know, what is it about that part that you don't realize? I'm a child. A child has dreams, but a child doesn't have a dream that is geared towards the life of an adult. That's impossible. And if there's anything happening to that child that is outside of the perimeters of what a child should think and feel and whatever, there's something wrong with that picture. So, yeah, I mean, you are held as a victim as long as you're not free of all of the things that occurred in your life.
That wow. Okay, so we're going to get to the book now. All right, this is so kind of like, tell us a little bit how you became to write this book. I know it is a shadowed past, and so kind of give us a little explanation of the book and how you became to write it, because I mean, we want to talk about emotional scars that you carry out through your adult life. The negative view that you may even have on life. So tell us a little bit then. Tell us about A Shadow Past.
A Shadow Past is a book of poems that I have had for a long time. And I decided to write this book and write these poems. And the publishing company said, why don't you tell us why you wrote those poems? So I went back through the book and I sit down and I sort of gave a synopsis of each one of these poems. I wrote why I wrote those poems that way, what happened in my life that made me write this poem this way.
So what did you get out of writing this book? How did you grow?
I let go of some of the things that I've been holding. You know, when I was writing the poems anyway, every time I wrote a poem, even in my notebook before I even put it in this book, I felt relief from the stuff that I was holding inside. I'm going to tell you something. I learned by writing this book that you can carry a life of problems. And I don't know if you believe in the law of attraction, but if you are walking around with a ball of that hasn't been dealt with, then you will continually draw those things to you. Then your circle is getting bigger and bigger. That is why it's so important to have that source. Even now we have like one friend. I have one friend that I can call and I can just let those things go, just talk about them any kind of way I want to. That's the greatest thing in the world. Everybody needs one source that is non-judgmental and will listen to you and give you great advice. That's healthy. That's healthy living. Unhealthy is not being able to express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And being comfortable in that expression. You have to nick it, nitpick, and make it fit and cater it up. And, you know, no, you should be able to say how you feel with the way you feel. Okay? This book provided me. It provided me to write down how I felt about certain situations in my past life and to say it in a rhythm. I can never say that word. A rhythm type way, because I'm a music person. I love music. Music was also my freedom source. I love music.
Dr. Sherry, this is pretty awesome, just to talk about, because I think about what you just said. You said that you need a release. You need to be able to express yourself in a non-judgmental way. And then that means you got to have a good listener, you know? Mm-hmm. And so just to be able to do that, that does help. That helps a lot. So now, in comparison to some of the other books you wrote, what were they about? And talking about some of the things that you share, The Shadowed Past.
The other books were, I'm going to use You Don't Know What I Overcome to Be Who I Am, Volume 1 and 2. I got a lot of people who wanted to share their stories, so we all come together. And there's a lot of things in A Shadowed Past that I didn't put in here, but I put in that book, like suicidal attempts, because I did have my bout with that, but that was a journey, eye-opening a journey. And you get to hear a lot of other people's stories of things that they overcame. What was the, I'm trying to think of what the other book was, The Bitter Curse and the Ties That Bind. That story is pretty much like the law of attraction. And then I'm going to tell you something. I had my daughter at a young age. I didn't know how to be a mom, and I never was taught how to be a mom by my mom. My mom wasn't a mom, you know? So I didn't have anything to show her or to give her. Better, I started to become better. I learned how to talk and communicate with her, because I think a lot of areas that parent, this is my opinion, I think with a lot of areas that parents are failing is that, one, you're not your child's friend, your child's parent, and you have to give guidance in a way of guidance. You give your child freedom to teach them that early. That's so important, because that leads to their identity. When they are able to express themselves and to say what, there's a respectable way of doing it, but you teach them respect too. So you let them have that freedom to express.
I like that. Tell us how people can get, I put in the chat, but let's see, tell us how people can get a hold of your book. Where can people get the book?
My books are available on Amazon. All you have to do is type in my name, and all of my books will come up. I have an author's page, so all of the books are right there.
Oh, perfect. And now, do you do private counseling as well?
I do. Right now, I'm specified in the drug and alcohol. That's what I'm doing now.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm doing drug and alcohol counseling. You know, I'm a great listener. So I welcome people to talk to me. If you have problems or issues, give me a call. I'm on Facebook. Go on Facebook. Pull me up. Just inbox me. I don't mind talking to you.
Oh, that is great. Because, you know, we're running out of time, so I didn't really want to get into the drug and alcohol, but that, we'll just spend a few minutes on that. That is destroying Black America. I don't care what anybody says. I think drugs and alcohol are destroying Black America. And so it has become a crutch, which has ended up in abuse. So how do we break this cycle?
Oh, my goodness. You know, once again, I can just say from the clients that I've that I'm working with, the freedom to be able to express themselves, because I found out that by working in this field is that there's a lot of people who have issues just like me. And then I'm going to jump back a little bit. My family was full of that. And that was one of the – I lost a very dear friend. I was right there when this person took their life. And I made it a promise to myself that I will become a drug and alcohol counselor. And I will learn how to help other people because I saw that. So it's once again, giving people the opportunity to talk about their problems instead of finding a way to escape them.
Oh, yeah. To talk about it. I think fear, what do you think about? Does fear keep us from talking about it? Are we afraid to talk about it because of what other people are going to think about us?
I do. I mean, like, say, for instance, I was a rape victim. And when I talked about it, I remember being laughed at, made fun of, and here you are thinking that you are about to get help, but in reality, that little circle of life made fun of you. And how do an 8-year-old child, you feel dirty. You feel, I don't even know how to explain that. But I know in that moment, I felt like a lost child. I was just lost.
Oh, wow. And then in families, what happened? I mean, when you are in a family that may not be condoning it, but they're not doing anything to stop the abuse. They're not doing anything to heal the pain. What happens? How do you go on and still love that family?
Yeah. One of the biggest and the most hardest thing in the world is to forgive people who hurt you, but you never be free of anything if you don't learn how to. It took me, 40-some years to learn how to forgive people and to go back and tell the very people that caused me so much harm that I loved them regardless. I love you. And that was something they never told me. But regardless, I still love you throughout all of the things. That's hard. That's a hard thing.
Wow, it is. Dr. Sherry Hicks, thank you so much for being on the show today. Thank you for sharing a shared past with us, a book of poems of your life. And thank you just for talking to us about how we get through this difficult time. I spoke about earlier that we may be dealing with one pandemic right now that's all over, but the Black people have been going through pandemics forever. We've had pandemics. This is not the first time. So, but thank you again. We invite you back to come and talk about again, because I just think this is really important to our mental health.
All right. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome, and you have a wonderful weekend. If you are in the Dallas area, please stop by on Monday to the African American Museum at 3536 Grand Avenue in sunny South Dallas Fair Park. They're having the Healthy Living Expo, the Realizing the Dream Healthy Living Expo. Stop by and chat with us, and some other authors will be there. It'd be great.
Will do. Thank you for the invite.
Thank you so much, and you have a wonderfully good weekend. All right.
You too.
Y'all,
bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Awesome. I'm just, what happened to, oh, there we go. Some kind of way, I guess we kind of got lost, y'all, but we are back, and my next guest is coming at any second now. Let me just make sure that I am logged in. Hold on. Give me just a second, y'all. Come on.
Now, press 1.
Oh.
It appears that the host has already dialed. The host is allowed.
So we're in. Thank you so much. All right. So that guest, a young man that I will call a friend as well. He is a native Tampa, Florida, a proud graduate of A&M University. He has been in the healthcare business for 35 years, covered all areas of respiratory pulmonary medicine, a sports fanatic, yes he is, a member of Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity. And his name is Andrew Wiggum III. And so we are going to invite Andrew and talk about some stuff. Hello, Andrew. Can you hear me? Your volume, you're muted. Let me see. Unmute you. I don't know why you're muted. Okay. I've got you muted on my end, but it says unmute the mic, and I'm unmuting. Can I unmute your guest because they chose to mute themselves? So you got to unmute.
All right.
Hello, Mr. Wiggum.
On the other side. I'm always on your side.
Yes, you are.
Thank you so much. Big introduction. You know, for a minute, I got lost of who you were talking about. But it's just a pleasure to be on the show today. I just wanted to spread some knowledge if possible. You know, we try to do the same thing on Sunday morning when I do my show as well. But I'm honored. I'm honored to ride in the, I guess,
that's okay. That is so cool because we got a lot to cover. I would like to cover. First of all, we are having the Realizing the Dream Healthy Living Expo. This is our fifth year, and can you believe it's been 5 years? I know last year was kind of a poot, right? But we are back, and you will be hosting your show. Your show for Monday, so you'll be talking to all of our wonderful, wonderful guests and stuff that'll be there, and our vendors and everybody. So I'm looking forward to that. But now, you know, when you and I had a little bit of a conversation, we are going to be hosting there as well. Dallas County is going to be doing vaccines. So can you just kind of like share a little bit about how important the vaccine is, you see, and this is in the new strain that we're dealing with. One had to be was really too respiratory, and now this one's a little bit different. It's just dealing with fever and body ache. So, yeah, let's talk about vaccines.
Okay. Well, first of all, when it comes to vaccines, we must understand everything involved when you get these vaccines. But what we need is our armor to protect us against the different variances of COVID. I've seen it from the beginning to the end of some things that have occurred, and I will try to take this time to talk about it a little bit. But let's look at the simple symptoms that one would have, some fever, chills, cough, shortness of breath, and some people may even have some difficulty breathing. You know, we always think that SOB, it's not that SOB. This SOB is all about shortness of breathing. And shortness of breath, so we must remember that. Fatigue, muscle and body ache, loss of taste and smell. That would maybe the first thing a lot of people may experience. That, I'm giving you a list, it may not include everything, but a few of these things you may be familiar with if you've gone through this process. Congestion, runny nose. It is flu season, and so a lot of people can need nausea, vomiting, and last but not least, diarrhea. If you're suffering with any of those, go get tested. You know, you have your pronouns, you have your hospitals. They even are starting to put them in your favorite drugstore so you can get them. They're readily available for you to test yourself. There are sites throughout Dallas County where you can go and get tested. It may take a couple days. But you know what? The one of the best things I've ever seen on TV was a commercial with a young lady asking her dad, why did he get the shot? And she replied, well, you know, once they had a little conversation, dad, can you get the shot for me? If they get home, I don't know what else will. So that marketing campaign was absolutely wonderful as it relates to these vaccines. Now, you, Marvin, you asked about the why. Again, to get that comfort that's needed. In my daily walk of life, I encounter a lot of people that have not get their vaccine. For whatever reason, there's some were dealt with some military veterans, and I asked them, what was that done if you were in the service and they offered this shot? So as a civilian, why are you refusing it? Folks, here's a chance. You know, when kids, it's about mumps, rubella, polio, all these things that we ended up getting dropped and shot, and we didn't have a safety. We made it through it. And why can't we have this armor with these different variants that we're experiencing? Have the armor as well. You know, the only thing here, as my grandmother said, is probably ivory soap. And that's 99.9% here. It's 100%. But yet, when you have that armor, like put your coat on, you have to protect you. And we want people to realize that. I've received both shots and my booster. Because I do practice what I preach.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. Now, you mentioned corona and the flu. So now, is it a thing they're calling now the corona flu, or, you know, having them both? Is that even possible?
Well, the thing is, both present some of the similar variances, or should I say out as far as runny nose, some of the symptoms are kind of like when we were in elementary school, the subset. It's only a subset when you have a union of both. And common ground could be the runny nose. Could be the cough that we're very much familiar with. Diarrhea.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to take those in our own hands and do something about it. Yes, some people have survived. There are a lot of people who didn't survive. It's almost like flipping a coin. It's a 50-50. You don't know what if it's heads or tails. But, you know, as an African-American male, there's so many things, stressors that we deal with. Dealing with finances, dealing with work situations. And people really don't understand what you're going through. But I pray every day for the strength to endure. Because if it wasn't for prayer, I don't think I would be on the program today, to be honest. So that's what it does this far. Why are we abandoning that?
And
telling you folks,
it's serious. Because how many people or articles or stories have you read that said, I didn't get the vaccine, and now I wish I had, or or the people that died, and they said they talked about the vaccine. They talked about how it wasn't no good or whatever, but then they get COVID because they didn't get the vaccine. Those are some serious.
Right. Well, you hear a lot of people talking about that. And let's go to the last part you said about people dying in your family that may not have been vaccinated. What is it going to take for us to really conceptualize what has just occurred? You lost a family member. If that doesn't hit you close, then I don't know what would. And people, now politics is playing a part. Last time I walked through a cemetery, the ones that were driving around were dead.
Right. Hello.
So, what else?
What can you say?
I hate to be so harsh, but it's the reality. In this thing, I have to steal a line from Prince. In this thing for life, you can get one shot at it.
Mm-hmm.
One. Let's do what we can to prolong. We don't know when the time or the hour that will be called. But until that time, let's enjoy it. Let's enjoy it as healthy as we could possibly be.
So I think you kind of covered this a little bit, but what actually occurs when you have COVID? And what is, they have the test out, the PCR test, is that, there's the antibodies. Is that something you get to keep you from it, or is that something you develop? Explain that.
Anytime you go through any type of illness, your mind and your body is just such a temple where it remembers, kind of like your computer. Don't save it, you can't recall it.
Mm-hmm.
The body stores it. And so the familiarity with the disease, sometimes you build an antibody that will fight it off.
Mm-hmm.
That's naturally. And then if you get injected with the vaccine, that helps jumpstart the antibodies as well.
Mm-hmm.
Try to prevent it from it. Now, it doesn't matter if you have antibodies and things of that nature. If you don't utilize this, all right?
Okay.
It's kind of like going in a gasoline.
And that is true.
That's my purpose today. To hit you hard. To let you know this thing is real.
Uh-huh.
Marvin, let me go back.
Okay.
When we first started the pandemic, you got to remember a lot of people right on top of each other.
Right.
And they had so many people coming to the ER. They had to bring extra trucks to come in for the deceased one. They were running out of ventilators. And I applaud the doctors on the East Coast. Most of the doctors learn the same information, but sometimes the East Coast can be a little bit more aggressive than that of our region, even as the West Coast. But the doctors were coming up with a device that they were trying to ventilate two or three patients with one ventilator because of the shortage. And what about their practice, they all had COVID, so it wasn't like you were cross-contaminating.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to save everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I appreciated about them. And it came across the country where a lot of hospitals were doing the same thing. But, again, by New York having the largest influx of it, by the time we got over here in the Midwest, people were making more ventilators. We had more ways of working with them. That was the key element there. But again, this is a new era. This is something. Let me take you on a historical point. When HIV started, like in the 80s, we read about it. Had no clue what it was. We had the downslide, and now we don't hear about it anymore. Not enough. But they've kind of cornered that. There's still people that may be infected, but we don't hear about it anymore, or not as much. Let me get that straight. Not as much. Excuse me. You know, it's a roller coaster, and we're on down slide. Now we're going back uphill with the Delta variant. You name any variants you want. Remember, it's gaining speed. And Marvin, you mentioned about, is it affecting, you know, with the lungs initially, the lungs, the Delta came in. Now the variants that we have here, a lot of people are building antibodies because it's not as strong. But you have to remember, if you have a pre-existing disease, your livelihood could be diminished because you have something else going on. So yeah. It's going to attack weak. And we have to, if you know you have some deficiencies, we need to set up. We got to put that shield on in order to fight. Anyway, I cannot reiterate that enough. You've got to get your shield. A lot of spirits out there that are providing information, but you just read. You got to go your own understanding. I'm not going to let you allow me to think what you're thinking.
Uh-huh.
Read it and do what's best for you. But
so Andrew, so I saw a commercial, and it said that the cloth mask, if we're wearing a cloth mask and we're in people, we could still, and have COVID, we could spread this, it could spread in 27 minutes. And then it said that if you have a N95, but the white cloth, but you know, the hospital one, not the N95 one, but the blue and white one. I have one around here somewhere. I can't find it. But anyway, that they gave 60 minutes. They said that could spread, you could still spread COVID in 60 minutes. And then they said, but the N95, and it was another number as well, but basically the N95, they said, it takes 24 hours. So are we fooling ourselves by wearing these cloth ones, the designer ones? What do you think?
You know what? My answer to you is, I'm not fooling myself. You know, it's kind of going in front of a loaded gun versus an unloaded gun. You don't know if it's loaded or unloaded, but if I'm in front of it, the chances of losing my life are greater than not standing in front of it.
Okay.
If this is going to be a deterrent, let's follow.
Okay?
If you wear this one, then I'll just spot in the screen.
That's okay.
Then we'll do that as well. Maybe up.
Okay.
But oftentimes you have so many people who feel as if it's impeding their breathing. Well, if it's impeding, the next step of dying is no breathing at all. And I'm trying to introduce the fact of what could happen.
Yeah.
You know, we've been on this earth 300, 600 years.
Yeah.
And we've survived a lot.
Yeah.
And if we do that, we could survive this as well. And it'd be a thing of past. Because right now, the variance is not as strong as it was previously because we do have some insight on it.
Wow.
Epidemiologists that are out there are doing great work of trying to find out. The CDC in Atlanta are working diligently to try to keep this thing under control. Let's do our part. You know, it's on you. But I know what my decision and what my family has done. We're going to do everything to at least stay on the earth an additional day. That's what we think. We can only take one day at a time.
That's true.
And if I can do everything for tomorrow, I'm going to have to do what's right today.
Wow. We are covering this, and I love all of the stuff that you're saying because this is important. It is just incredibly important. Again, I want to mention that we are having a healthy living expo where you will be hosting your show the World According to Drew. And you will be talking with people. And you know what, y'all? Come out and get yourself a vaccine if you haven't had your vaccine. And then they're also giving away $25 Walmart gift cards. So that should be some kind of incentive to you. But the fact is that we have to get ahead of this. If we don't get ahead of this by doing our part, you say, wearing our masks, practicing those social distancing, and getting vaccinated, you know. And I agree with you on that commercial of the little girl says, Daddy, what's in the vaccine? Will you get it? You know, and then that leads me to the next question, too. I mean, come on. Are we hearing that the vaccine has the coronavirus in it and they're giving it to you? Why are we hearing that the flu shot, you take it in one and done and you don't have to worry about the flu that year? And but when you get a vaccine, you still gonna get COVID. So kind of take us through that, and why are we dealing with that?
Well, you know, you're gonna always have sidewalk terrorists. That's what I like to going into it. It's all, you know, it's all the common cup.
Mm-hmm.
But there's people where Dr. Fauci and other epidemiologists that are really trying to put a finger on this epidemic. Like I say, every so often we've gone through smallpox, we've gone through polio. Some of you are old enough to remember those polio drains that were done back in the day. So it's kind of like evolution. Every so often something comes. We have to kind of get in here and kind of tie your bootstraps and do what's right. And if you don't do it for yourself, do it for your kids. Do it for your grandkids if you need a reason. But the ideology that we have developed since we're adults now, let's not spread false information to our kids or even to your grandkids. That's not what it's worth. You know, and that's not going to work.
So let me ask
you. Informed than we were.
So let me ask you this. The polio vaccine kept you from getting polio, right?
Right.
Then vaccine. The rubella vaccine. So these vaccines were to keep you from getting those diseases. So why is COVID-19 vaccine not keeping you from getting COVID, but is keeping you from dying? What is the science there? I guess I don't understand that.
Well, the question that you have, they're able to get a little bit more information as it relates to those disease processes. And so when you find out more, you do a bit more, whether it's Pfizer, Moderna, or Johnson & Johnson, people have worked tirelessly to try to isolate that COVID molecule. And like you mentioned earlier, it affects the lung, circulation, a lot of people are blood thinners right now just to make sure they don't have accumulation in the extremity. So we're learning as we go by life and also in medicine. You know, it's always something that's going to keep going that will make you just want to see the end of the race.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to keep them in business.
Yeah.
But we don't want, we'd rather put them out of business.
Yes.
But this is something that we have encountered. Now, this is not a reflection of this station. I'm going to put this first. And I know some curious. It's the first time I'm going to go outside the box for me. Something to control population.
Mm-hmm.
Put it at that. I'll put it out there.
Okay.
For you. Think about it.
Controlling population.
If they are doing it, I'm going to do everything so I won't be in that number.
Okay.
I don't know what I can control in my life. You know, God forbid, I could walk out of my place somebody hit me with a dump truck. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Something falls from the sky and hit me in my head. I don't know myself.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But the things I can control is what I put in my body,
mm-hmm.
and what I can do to prevent it from coming in. And we all need to do that.
Well, here's another thing to throw at you. There's been talk, people think that smoking weed is going to keep them from getting COVID. And I was like, really? So is that why weed's gone up? The price of weed is gone up? You know, That is so crazy.
Weed right now, it's real. We're talking about product and supply, you know. Demand of this particular product. So, if it's high demand, the price is going to go up. One-on-one, supply and demand.
Right.
Some people are taking advantage of that opportunity. And what scares me, stoplight, or even going in the highway, I can smell that. New weed in my car. Can you imagine smelling in your car?
Hello.
What is it? I put the recycled air button in my truck. It just keeps driving when you shift.
Yes.
So I talk to kids about it, and they call it loud, and it is loud.
And it is. Oh my God! But here is what I actually have learned is that it is not the weed that has the THC in it. The CBD compound that's in weed that comes from weed is what is helping people from getting. But it's all medical. Your doctor knows the real deal behind that. And, you know, because we have now, talking about CBD, it is now, you can buy it. I mean, there's stores, there's online places you can.
Legalized, yes it is.
It's legalized, the CBD is. So, I mean, it comes in all kinds of forms, creams and oils and smokable. As well, and food and cookies and stuff like that, you know.
Right.
So, but
well, you know, we've been familiar with cookies for a while.
Yeah.
Do you remember? So, you know, whatever you want to believe, I just think the whole concept.
Mm-hmm.
When you're getting your medicinal cigarettes. Or whatever you're doing, you know, it's only slowing down your reflex.
Well,
so instead of putting your mask on like this,
uh-huh.
Looking around.
Andrew, I love you. So we will close this out with talking. The last couple of minutes on fatigue from COVID and how can we combat our fatigue?
Well, one, you know, you think about the patients or the individuals that have gotten the COVID bug, and the fatigue is about trying not to catch COVID. We've changed our lives. We've been inside more than we've ever been. But as kids, what your grandparents, they'll send you out all day. Let's get out there and keep exercising in. But now, since we're inside, we're gaining weight, okay? Because we're eating a lot. We're not exercising enough. So eating too much, not exercising, that's not good. Now, you have something else going on. Weight issues, could be heart, strain on your heart. It will make you a little bit more susceptible for this COVID virus if it is pre-existing. Factors in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is a new norm. You know, whereas people, we got to still be careful when we have gatherings.
Mm-hmm.
So when we see you out there, please social distance. We'll see you on Monday. Make sure you put your mask on.
Mask will definitely be required on Monday. And they will get temperatures and everything. Andrew, thank you so much for today. I appreciate you and your wealth of knowledge helping everybody kind of get just a little bit better understanding. And, you know, you kind of bring it to them. And look, you got a choice here. You can live or die. So why would you choose dying? Makes no sense, right? So thank you again, Mr. Wiggum. I appreciate you. We will do this again really soon, and I can't wait till Monday. We will enjoy the holiday and the Healthy Living Expo. Thank you.
Right. A day of service and not work.
A day of service.
And we're going to be servicing at our, and don't forget, Sunday morning, tune in. Soul Soccer. We go at it early. The real Sunday school.
That's right. 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Blog Talk Radio. The number is 646-200-0459. Join the Andrew Wiggins and Harold Hubbard as they box it out and solve all of the issues of today.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much, too. Have a great day. All right. Be safe. Awesome, awesome. I do love Andrew. He is a wonderful guy, and he's awesome. He's awesome. So now we're moving into our next segment. We will have Don J. Nelson. He is the principal consultant and founder of 21U Strategies. And it is a consulting arm of his organization, 21 Inspire ULLC. He is a 20-plus year veteran business development executive. He consults for nonprofit organizations on fundraising strategies, including feasibility studies, sponsorships, diverse board recruitment, interim staff resource needs, and campaign management using relevant technologies. He also supports entrepreneurship endeavors. He has taken on various leadership roles, including chief development officer of a Maryland nonprofit and vice president of resource development and the United Way of Northern Nevada. There he led teams in mission critical impact for local national communities. At the United Way, Don led local corporate employee resource groups in their volunteer efforts for a day of caring. This call to action day is in honor of the 2017 Las Vegas victims. It was. So yes, we do remember that. But he is going to be here shortly, and we are just going to, you know, talk to him about a few things that, you know, I don't know about you, but I just feel like we are suffering. Black people are definitely suffering in this economy, you know, not like we have before, but since the coronavirus. And it started out shutting businesses down. People lost jobs. Now they say that the jobs are building. People don't want to go to work. Well, it's a lot in that. And we're going to try and unpack that as well and talk with Don about this. And so, anyway, we just expect him to be on shortly. He's ready. Okay. So we're going to bring Don on. Hello. Good morning, Don. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Martha?
I am great. Thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate you for being here. And, you know, I was just saying in your bio, I know you're doing some great things. You are helping nonprofits and raising money to get their foundations off the ground. But there's so much more into this. And I want to really get down and talk about business because, you know, in this economy, they're talking about recession. Things are going up. I mean, I saw how much meat, how much gas, how much everything is just going up. But I don't see the money coming in. And then the interest rate, talking about they got to raise the interest rate in order to keep the economy from tanking. So how does that have an effect? First of all, before you even answer that, let's tell a little bit more about yourself. I'm going to let you introduce yourself again to us. What you do, and go ahead.
Well, Marva, so I'm Don Nelson. I see my title there going across the screen. I am the founder of 2IU Strategies, doing business as 2IU Strategies from the landmark organization, which is called 2 Inspire You. And that's really about inspiration and growth. We evaluate, elevate, and deliver businesses. And really, I focus on helping organizations with their fundraising, and that comes through making sure I'm looking at best practices, as well as learning technologies to help with campaigns, board recruitment, as well as sponsorships, things of that nature for businesses. I work for profit as well as nonprofit organizations. So that's a little bit about my organization. As far as background on me, I'm a 20-year veteran, fundraiser, business development executive that has a background in technical sales as well as engineering, as well as multicultural marketing and program management. I don't know if my bio was shared.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll leave it there.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. So what are some of the things that businesses are looking at? What are some of the challenges that faces, and are there any successes right now?
Well, certainly, and also, by the way, I'm very appreciative of being on the call to you as well as Brother Terry Allen. I will give him a shout out while I'm on the line. but as far as challenges that are faced right now, you know, let's be real, it's institutionalized racism that's in play for our community. That we have had to overcome. We do recognize that, but that is something that's a hurdle, not a wall. And that's something we're going to have to work around and find it within ourselves to work together on. When you look at the Black community, there's a recent McKinsey study that talked about this. It really said, about 20% of us that are starting a business, but about 4% of us start up and give up. So it's really telling as far as that challenge, and we know the barriers that are there. Beyond the racism component, we know that there are challenges with access to credit, networks for venture capital funds. And when you look at those venture capital funds, that's a real big piece of the wealth. When you look at where the money is, we know that it's in retirement funds, as well as through larger organizations like fintech, through big pharma, through automobile industry, hospitals, things of that nature, as well as supermarkets. However, Black folk, us, we tend to be more in the health, social, areas and for specific professional areas for technical services, as well as administrative support and waste management, construction, things like transportation and warehousing. So we are in, when we're in the ideation stage for our entrepreneurship, we're thinking smaller as opposed to larger. Now, mind you, there are many of us that are in those larger industries, but nowhere near in those five areas. And so that's something we need to think about, is growing our mind as to what we can actually do beyond what we've been used to in the past. And also, you look at what happened in 2020 with George Floyd and all that occurred after that, and the wave of momentum. A lot of that has slowed down a little bit, and we have to continue to build on that momentum that we have gained in 2020. And a lot of that has to do with making sure that we're, adapting to the digital technology out there, and I know, there are many of us in our community that just don't have access. We didn't have access before, and the pandemic made it even worse. So when you talk about that challenge alone, just looking at the libraries, I talked to an individual one day, and they said, well, there's always internet access by going to the library. Well, what happens when the library is closed because of the pandemic? And you knock on the door, and they say, go online. So that becomes a new challenge in making sure we close the digital divide. That's a personal piece for me because part of my background is engineering. I worked many years, almost over a decade, as a Black Engineering Director of Corporate Relations. And so in that, a big piece of helping to clear that was the great equalizer, our group, to help us move forward. But that becomes a challenge because there are many, many challenges in the pipeline where, when you look at the pipeline from third grade all the way through to the end of the year, that was a big thing we worked on at NESPE. But when you look at other organizations and you look at the multicultural media that's out there, and the images that we see on TV, a lot of that is also changing, and we're finding ways to overcome it.
Well, you said a lot in that, and I'm trying to unpack just a little bit of it. What I didn't quite understand, but comes to access to credit. So we had the stimulus package, and then they opened up with the grants. The grants came, companies got money from stimulus. They didn't even exist. Companies got money that this was for small business that ended up in major corporations. So so has that all come and gone? Is there anything left for the small business? Because I'm not understanding how, people are getting buildings built behind the stimulus. And the man that's got the corner store in South Dallas can't get a dime. So talk about that.
So that is a great question. That is I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert on exactly what happened
right there.
I will tell you that I do know that when I opened the call up speaking about institutionalized racism, and there are challenges and barriers that are in place for us to be able to have access. When you look at the corporation itself and abolition of slavery, when it first started with the actual corporation in America, it was built off of a group of lawyers that, were taking on what was meant for our group, African Americans and free slaves, to building a corporation and taking away our real body, which is a corporation, away from us who make a real body. And when you look at that challenge in itself, that has propagated percentage. And so when you look at how you try to access credit directly through corporations and try and access funds to be able to receive your grants, some of those challenges that you run across can really be barriers that are institutionalized from corporations that have resources that we don't have as small businesses. So when you go to a bank and ask for that door, you know, individuals already have relationships prior to even being put in that bank, then that's a serious barrier for you to overcome. And those are the things that you can't find inside of an article or inside of media, and they're not going to tell you those things.
So right.
Those are some of the things we're having to overcome. What we have to do is come together and pool our together as a community and really stop operating like in the crab in the barrel type of mentality, right? And make sure that we work together to build our own community of investing in one another, much like we did in the Tulsa times,
mm-hmm.
right? And Black Wall Street. But we have to understand that we're geographically dispersed in a lot of different areas now, and we're dealing with the global economy. Even still, we have to try to work together digitally to overcome what's currently occurring and think about action as opposed to taking on a body and making more of an abundance. But I definitely do not want to minimize the challenges that we're going through. We have to be forgiving of our businesses when we're running through challenges and help educate another.
Okay, so now when you talk about the digital divide, but in those neighborhoods, in those areas where there are businesses, but you said go to the library, but the library is closed. But yet, you still have the phone, right? You still have the phone, and the phone is working because guess what? Most of those people have lines. So, they may not have internet service with their TV because everybody is getting what they call the Fire Stick. Or if you've got an Apple product, then you get the Roku TV. You know, so they're buying this, so they don't even really need that. But how do you use the things that we do have and connect that digital divide? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So that's part of what I mean by using the new relevant technology. And even though we talk about using those tools, many of us, even though we have the tools, aren't necessarily understanding how to use the tools, right? And for instance, you can have a celebration for through family, through Zoom and FaceTime on your phone, right? But when you all come together and network together for the common good of our business, right? That becomes a question that we have to really get ourselves in the mirror.
Yeah.
Something we're used to dealing with. Typically, all of us are really focused on making sure we're together and working in silos, but we have to make sure that we branch outside of our normal networks to be able to work together as businesses, using those same tools we do for our families.
Yeah, now I get that.
New for me. That's a new territory.
Yes, that is a new territory. So tell us how you are helping in this nonprofit and profit world. So how are you helping these businesses?
It depends. I meet businesses where they are. So if you're a nonprofit that's brand new and starting up, I went with this one organization that was helping with Black kids in STEM. They're looking to build their fundraising, the infrastructure to be able to, the groundwork to be able to help grow that. So what I did was I focused on feasibility study, and I looked at what's going to make sense. Do you even have what it takes? Do you have the core pieces to be able to build what you're looking to build as far as your program? And I ended up thinking that they not do it. Now we needed to do more as an organization to really get things going, to build a campaign to raise funds for that organization. I also do board recruitment. So many of these organizations have their board does not reflect their staff, and their staff does not reflect who they're serving. And so I'm trying inclusivity, equity, and diversity standpoint within the right individuals to help lead those organizations. And then also some sponsorships, you know, just sponsoring, working with corporations to help sponsor what you're trying to do, whether it be through music, whether it be through helping a cause as far as helping people build homes, whatever it is, you're going to need some type of sponsorship as far as being able to get to that next step. So that's one piece. And then also fundraising from grants. You know, many organizations don't realize how many funds out there are coming from foundations as well as the government. They're trying to do as nonprofits. And from a for-profit standpoint, connecting organizations together for advertising and such. So
I think that's really helpful because we can do this by ourselves. Because at the beginning you said start and quit, basically. And that's what happens. I got an idea. I've got a business. I want to start it. And 4 months in, I realize this ain't going to work. And instead of reaching out to someone like you, Don, they end up quitting. And so in today's economy, what is the plight of the black business? How are we gonna stay on top of things? How are we gonna keep the doors open?
Well, for one thing, what we can do is make sure that we adapt, as I stated before, make sure that we are coming together and recognizing that, you know, and when I say adapt, if you are a brick and mortar organization or you have some type of building, right? Well, when you're inviting people, you need to recognize that that alone may deter your customers, right?
Mm.
You may need to be a target and have curbside service, right?
Okay.
As well as those that are inside. Understand that your audience right now, just like America, is divided.
Okay.
And so you need to think about that from a business perspective. How are you going to cater to your new audience? Because your audience is developing, so are you evolving. Those are some of the things. And then also, what other entities in your industry that are looking for supporting black businesses? There are many now, especially now, because the businesses, big organizations are smaller, they're looking for silo contractors.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, you look at silo contractors, many, there's a worker shortage, right? And it's becoming more and more expensive based off of wages, so they're looking to reduce. So you can look at working with, if you're trying to do a sole proprietorship, just look at organizations that are looking for diverse suppliers. That's a big piece.
It is a really big piece, and that makes a whole lot of sense. So these businesses have to start to find new ways to create continue their revenue. Like you said, if it's more instead of them coming in, then let's now do some outside. Let's deliver or curbside. I saw here's one. You know, if corporations like Walmart can jump in this game and do the same thing, now they've got a new delivery service that is going to come to your home and put your groceries in the freezer. Wow. I
How do you compete with that if you're a black business?
Exactly. How do you compete with that? And there's also a trustworthy factor. Now, I'm going to trust Walmart because they Walmart. They make miles and put my food in the freezer. But Johnson's Corner Store, who hired Elmo that lived down the street to deliver groceries, he's not coming back from the porch. Why is there a trust? I mean, how do we rise above that as far as that trust factor? Because I think that plays a big part as well. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts on that are one customer at a time. One customer at a time. Word of mouth, brand, become residual. If you're one customer, that customer takes care of you. And what we tend to do is we tend to think the grass is greener by bringing in all these extras and not taking care of the that you already have, that your core customer. rest will, to me, my experience will happen on its own organically, because individuals will be your testimony and capability statement of taking care of them. Now, when you look at those types of organizations that have those types of resources, again, that comes back to, you know, how those organizations got started. So they had funds initially to help them. But we have to think big, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can't just, you know, think small mom and pop shop,
mm-hmm.
You know, thinking we're going to be able to go over here and sell, you know, sell from a table at a farmer's,
mm-hmm.
and think we're going to be a Walmart. If you want to be a Walmart, you need to have a plan in play, a marketing plan that shows scalability and growth for your organization to be able to get to that level. And so that's something that I would have a chance to work with an organization to help.
Wow. You said that last thing was important, scalability, having the business and marketing plan, which the average small business doesn't have either of those. They don't, I mean, they know that they're good at something and they try to do what they're good at, and that's basically where they run up against that brick wall. So is there anything else that, Mr. Nelson, that you want to cover with us? Because we're running out of time today, but I want to go back because you said a lot. And we can unpack some more of it a little bit at a time and get our people involved. So how can they, one, get in touch with you and, again, close us out with something that, you know, we may or may not have that you want to share with us?
Okay, so my business email address is info@2iustrategies.com. IUStrategies.com, the number
mm-hmm.
2IUStrategies.com. And, you know, and we can start from there, you know, just share information on business needs. And, of course, do have in my office. But I do a lot of mentoring of businesses, mentoring of individuals, youth, on getting their prepared because they're very important. To leave that legacy so that we can grow. Because I stand on the shoulders of my ancestors and know that we get to where I am. I have two educated parents that I'm blessed with many do not have. You know, in our households, many of us are single-parent households. And many of us, even with the single-parent households, are floating outside of single-parent households are floating through foster homes. So all of this becomes
and
those are things that I try to help overcome.
And that is great. I'm trying to put that in the your email that's in there that they can contact
okay.
you so that I thank you for joining me today. I know that it was short notice, but you were gracious and kind to come on and talk about this. Things is really, really important. And I also want to let you know, too, if you are in the Dallas area, we need to see you on Monday down at the Fair Park where we are hosting the Realizing the Dream Healthy Living Expo. And we are going to be dealing with some everything of our health, our financial health, our physical, our spiritual, our mental health. And so we would love for you to come by with us and you know, share these strategies that you have.
Well, I appreciate that. I unfortunately I will not, although it is my hometown.
Oh, it is. Okay, so where are you?
Yeah. Duncanville. I'm in Virginia.
Okay. Okay.
Virginia. Okay. I grew up in Duncanville area.
Oh, wow. Well, welcome. Enjoy Texas. Get a chance to come back and hang out with us. You have to stop by the office and check us out.
Sounds good.
Again, thank you, Mr. Nelson. I appreciate you for coming on today, and I really do. I really, really do appreciate it. And you just gave us a whole lot to think about, and we'll be talking about it about days upon time.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. All right. Thank you so much, Don. All right. Take care. All right. Awesome. We are going to move on down the road. It is getting, we are, wow, man, it's 4 minutes before closing. I mean, before we are not here. So I just want to thank everyone for tuning in today. Dr. Sherry Hicks. Andrew Wiggum III. These are my guests today. And Don Nelson with 2IU Strategies. Our listening audience, Terry Allen, always supports. And so many others of you are listening on our Blog Talk Radio as well. We thank you for tuning in. We really do. It is going to be, it's great to have you a part of this. And like I said, we have like 5 minutes left. And what I wanted to do before we leave is just to remind you of our fifth annual Healthy Living Expo. And it is called the Realizing the Dream Healthy Living Expo, and it is hosted by iMessenger Media, LLC, and the Don't Believe the Hype Foundation, and it's powered by the Dallas Morning News, Co-America Bank, and the Avenue PRC. It is going to be at the African American Museum at 3536 Grand Avenue in Fair Park. Come and get your COVID vaccine. They're giving away $35 Walmart gift cards. Get tested, win prizes, and participate in our karaoke contest. So if you can sing, we want you to bring it. And it is from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. You know, the African American Museum is there at Fair Park at Gate 5. And you don't have to pay to park. Just tell them you're going to the African American Museum. And we will see you on Monday, January the 17th, the day we celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday, which is actually tomorrow, the 15th. And so I'm going to leave with just the some more words from his I Have a Dream speech. And so we are going, I'm just going to pull that up and let you kind of listen to that as we go out today. Thank you again for hanging in there with me today. And I enjoyed your company and I hope you enjoyed the show. Here is Dr. Martin Luther King.
At this time, I have the honor to present to you the moral leader of our nation. I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions.